You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour two on this Monday. Come on in. Stay a while. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Your phone calls, best and worst of the weekend, as we always do every Monday. And there was a lot to like and some things not to like. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DPShow. You can find us on Peacock and our nearly 400 radio stations around America. By the way, Dunder Mifflin has a new home on Peacock. If you're a newbie to Scranton, you can stream every episode again and again. Sign up at peacocktv.com to stream now. Yes, Paul?
I had to jump in here. I watched the Scott's Tots episode yesterday of The Office.
I could never watch it again. It was that uncomfortable.
I did at halftime. I watched about 10 minutes of it. If you haven't seen it, strap in, buckle up.
Yeah, I had a hard time watching that one again.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah. So we got a poll question, McLovin. Is that right?
Yeah, so of the four teams that lost this weekend, who's in the best shape moving forward? The Browns running away from it. Interestingly, New Orleans is at 1%.
Yeah,
nobody has the Saints.
I don't know what's happening at the quarterbacking position. The Browns, I feel like, I know what they have, and now with another year of experience, you hopefully beef up that defense. I thought the defense at times looked great, but I got a big question mark with the Saints at the quarterbacking position, because right now I got Breeze, Jameis Winston, and Taysom Hill. I don't think either are the answer there in New Orleans. Yeah, McLovin.
You do have Alvin Kamara. You have the ghost of Michael Thomas. You have a defense. You have stars everywhere.
Yes, you do. Got to have a quarterback.
What happened to Michael Thomas?
Got to have a quarterback. Just got this from Daniel Jeremiah, who works for the NFL Network, former NFL scout. And at Move the Sticks, he says, if Deshaun Watson became available via trade the Jets should call, you could trade the second pick this year. They still have the 23rd pick. First in 2022, they have two and a first round in 2023. That's three first round picks. They could pick up an extra pick or picks if they traded Sam Darnold. And then he puts in parentheses, my gift to sports radio. I don't know if it's that simple, but if I'm the Texans right now, I just want to find out where Deshaun Watson is mentally. I don't even know if they know where he is physically, because last I heard, he was in New York. And that kind of led to some rumors there that maybe he would want to, why not have another former Houston athlete relocate in New York City. Maybe he's been asked, you know, he'd been looking at James Harden and figuring, oh, okay, James got out of Houston and maybe I'll do the same. Yeah, Paul.
But if you're the Texans and you think to yourself, we've got a quarterback who doesn't want to be here and we're down a lot of draft picks. This fixes both. And you may think to yourself, if we give him to the Jets, I don't know if I'm overthinking this, the odds of him winning a Super Bowl with the Jets and us eating this trade are low because they're the Jets. I know Deshaun Watson is a big X factor and changes the Jets, but historically, why would you think that anyone's going to win a Super Bowl with the Jets?
And I think you look at these deals and you have to look at it and say, okay, does he want to be here? Can we rectify this? Can we somehow make this better? And if not, now, you know, you got to get a big haul for him. The question is how much you're going to get, but you have to have a quarterback in this league. We know that. You have to have a star quarterback in this league. It's star driven at that position. And at his age, if you're going to trade for him, you're Miami or you're the Jets, then it's going to cost you at least three first round draft picks. Yeah, Paulie.
I have the latest odds for the team that would trade for Deshaun Watson. Right. Jets are first. The Dolphins are second. The Bears are third. The Broncos are fourth. And then it goes down the line.
The Bears don't get another chance at Deshaun Watson. No, you had your chance.
Right.
You don't get another chance.
They should kibosh that trade.
Yes. They would just say, look, we have to take ourselves out of this because we screwed up the first time when we had a chance for him.
Like I said before, it does feel like there's a rule in the NFL that good quarterbacks are not allowed to go to the Chicago Bears. So that would be consistent.
Drew Brees holding off retirement talk. And the reason why, from what I was told about 20 minutes ago, is he didn't want to take away from anything. He wants to have a standalone press conference. You don't want to have it right after the game. And, you know, it's emotional there. He's with his kids, with his wife on the field after the game. Tom Brady came out. They exchanged hugs there. But this will be a standalone press conference. And I think that Sean Payton knows what the answer is. And so does Drew Brees. He's got that job at NBC Sports waiting for him. That's not the way you want to go out. But you got to get emotion out of this. This has to be a business decision. You're making a business decision now. Do you want to try to do it one more time? Or can you walk away after a game like this where you didn't throw for 150 yards and you threw three interceptions? We just had Troy Aikman on last hour. You can go to danpatrick.com if you missed that interview. And Troy was talking about it. You know, it's a double-edged sword. I can't walk away. I played poorly. I can't walk away. We just won. Well, Drew Brees, can you walk away after throwing three interceptions? Packers over the Rams, Bills, Ravens. Bills win that one. Chiefs over the Browns, Buccaneers, and the Saints, with the Bucs winning it by 10. We've been talking a lot about Chad Henne coming in, and Chad Henne had the great third down run, set up the fourth down. Now, he did throw the interception, but you know, I'm going to give him a big hall pass. You're coming in, you're not expecting to play, and that was sort of like a punt. But the fourth down call, where it's fourth and less than a yard, and Tony Romo's the most shocked guy in the building. And what I thought was interesting is there's around 13 or 14 seconds left on the play clock. And Tony Romo is sort of giving you play-by-play. This is what you do. He goes, look at the body language. They're not running a play. You know, go up to the line of scrimmage. And I thought 13 seconds is a long time to try to pull off this caper to get you to jump off sides. And then all of a sudden, with about 7 seconds to go, which is the brilliant part of this, is you just had Tyreek Hill go out and, you know, create a little bit of separation. Didn't need to do much. And the defense is not expecting anything. But the brilliance of the call is that you made the call with around 7 seconds left. And the defense is just going, all right, we're just going to, all right, they're going to try to drop, you know, draw us offside. We're not going to do that. And then you had that call, which, I mean, it's a great call in that moment. It's even greater because it's Chad Henne out there. But it was a one-yard first down throw. But the defense is just, they don't want to get caught. They don't want to be in the neutral zone. They don't want to be offsides. And then you get the first down, and that's basically the end of that game. But Andy Reid did talk about Chad Henne coming in for Patrick Mahomes.
So I'm proud of Chad and the way he handled everything. And, you know, he probably said it best when he said, listen, this team is unbelievable when somebody has to come in and make them feel comfortable. And, you know, that's what team's all about. So, you know, again, I'm proud of the way he handled things. So.
Kansas City Chiefs, last eight victories, 2-4, 3-6, 6-3, 3-5. That's why I like the Browns in this game, because I thought Kansas City would keep them in the game. Little did I know that they were going to have a legitimate chance to win. Rashad Higgins has the ball fumbled out of the end zone, and I said to the Danettes I was going to give them an opportunity to present their case, 30 seconds or less. What would you do to change the rule? Because this rule's been around a long time, and we have this incredulous attitude towards it when we see it. Like, they got to change that. It's the one rule that benefits the defense. It's a touchback, and the defense gets the ball. Now, my thoughts were, if you fumble the ball out of the end zone, how about we take it back to the 20-yard line, 25-yard line? You keep the ball, cost you the down, you go back to the 25-yard line. That would be my suggestion. Keep it simple, but that's rare in the NFL. McLevin, I'll start with you, being the football expert and the host of Against the Grain.
Okay, I would probably give the ball to the offense and make them go to the 25-yard line.
Okay.
Which is exactly what you just said. For the same reason, I do think, though, it takes out the most exciting play when you dive for that pylon. That's my rationale. I love that play.
I do too, but this way you could still keep it. But I still go back to what Bill Belichick tells his players. Don't dive and risk losing the ball. He says don't do that. Yeah, McLovin.
But he's the enemy of fun. Bill Belichick, that's who we're listening to? I mean, of course he's right, but it's still like a little spicier to have that play in the game.
Would you rather the Browns didn't have as much fun, not as spicy, and they still had the ball after that fumble?
Well, the thing is, I don't think Higgins was showboating. I think he was making a real football player.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But I just don't like that it goes out and then, you know.
If you fumble it out of bounds at the 40-yard line, there's no thought of, well, maybe we should give it to the other team. Middle of the field, that wouldn't even be a consideration.
Todd, ready?
I am.
All right.
Good morning, Judge Patrick and esteemed members of the Danette staff.
Oh, no.
Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to address the Man Cave Court today. In the case of Rashad Higgins versus the NFL's touchback rule, I urge you not to penalize an athlete so harshly in an attempt to innocently reach across the goal line or touch the pylon and score a touchdown for his team, the fans, the community, the state.
Todd, that's 30 seconds.
I ran out of time.
All right, continue. A little bit more.
And in this instance, the worldwide dog pound. May it please the court, I submit a punishment of no worse than the ball being placed 20 yards back with the fumbling team keeping possession of the ball, preferably spotting the ball at the spot of the fumble, and certainly not rewarding the opponent with the ball on their own 20. Mr. Higgins is guilty of nothing more than perhaps poor judgment.
Give me the summation.
Summation. The people implore Commissioner Goodell and the National Football League to immediately amend Article 3, Item 4, entitled Out of Bounds in End Zone. It may be too late for Browns Nation, but we have an opportunity here and now to prevent other teams from suffering a similar fate, especially with a spot in a conference title game at stake. This rule is at best unfair and outdated, but I'd submit at its core appalling and intolerable. Enough is enough. The defense rests on.
What part of 30 seconds did you not
understand? I kind of blew past that a little bit.
I initially said 20, but I have to give you, I gave you a cushion of 10 more seconds. Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome.
Seton, what do you have?
I leave the rule exactly the way it is and spend more time figuring out why the ground can cause a fumble out of bounds but not inbounds. I would spend more time on that rule figuring that out.
That's a bad idea. Paulie?
I would leave the rule exactly like it is. Yes. It's a high-risk, high-reward play. It incentivized a guy like Sorensen to knock the hell out of Higgins and make a great
play. Well, it should have been
play.
A helmet-to-helmet.
Worth the risk.
They missed that helmet to helmet.
Yep.
And they missed that.
But a great play by Sorensen, and worth the risk, and it benefits the defense.
Yeah, but I don't want you to lose the ball. I think you should maintain the ball, but just take it back to the 25-yard line. I don't know. Front row doesn't agree with me, but so what? Yes, McLaurin.
I have to admit, I was wildly impressed with Todd's Law and Order thing, but I don't know which way he voted. I got so confused. Is he for the play or against the play?
No. We move on. Patrick Mahomes' mom, Randy, was furious over the play for Mac Wilson when he hit Patrick Mahomes, hit her son, ejected him for the game. She tweeted, number 51 Wilson, that's some trash football, leading with the helmet, pulling his head and pushing his helmet, Randy tweeted Sunday. Why are you not thrown out? Come on, NFL. I don't know if somebody said to Randy, did you see Sorensen's hit? Because that was helmet to helmet as well.
Imagine if moms got to decide targeting or not. There'd be a lot more calls. He hit my boy.
Wilson said that he's never been a dirty player in his life. I just try to play my best, to play fast, make plays. Don't try to insult me and keep the threats to yourself. He says that he prays that Patrick Mahomes will be back next week. Go be great like you have been. I didn't think that it was... I didn't think it was a dirty play. Yes, McLeod.
There are a lot of people on Twitter criticizing Reed for running Mahomes with a bad toe or something, like whatever toe.
Yeah.
So, like, shouldn't you protect him a little more? Did you need a run play there?
Did anybody think it was a dirty play?
No. I thought it was a mistake to run that dangerous a play for the Chiefs, but he didn't helmet to helmet, did he? Did he really do that?
I did. I saw far more in Sorensen's hit. On Higgins, that was helmet to helmet. Definitely helmet to helmet. And then the fumble out of the end zone. All right, so we went through everything with the games. The Chargers are going to hire Brandon Staley, the Rams defensive coordinator. The Lions are going to hire Dan Campbell. I said this to the Danettes. I don't know if it was 2 weeks ago. May have been a little bit... back further, I said there is some talk that Eric Bieniemy is not going to get a head coaching job. And you guys looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, this is just what I'm hearing, that Eric Bieniemy, he might get left out again. Leslie Frazier is, I guess, the lead candidate for the Texans. And he's the Bills defensive coordinator. Then you're down to the Eagles and what they do. And there might be some apprehension from the Eagles front office with Eric Bieniemy, maybe with some incidents when he was younger. But, you know, there's still, well, there's only two openings. Right? So I don't know what the reason is. I'm sure the reason will come out, but you would think Eric Bieniemy would be getting that opportunity. But from what I heard, this is at least 2 weeks ago. Now, maybe the Eagles. because I thought the Eagles were definitely hiring a minority candidate. I thought that that was a given, that they were hiring a minority candidate. I don't know who that's going to be, but right now it doesn't feel like Eric Bieniemy is going to get the head coaching job. If he does, I think it might be Philadelphia. Yeah, McClellan.
Can I speak as an Eagles fan? I feel like they really need an offensive guy like that to either fix Wentz or develop Hurts. Feels like, I know that they're interviewing. Doesn't that feel like a job that needs to be an offensive? So Bieniemy seems perfect.
Well, you got
to
be careful, though. If you come in and you have somebody who's doing something specific, when you know, that's like an offensive coordinator who can help fix that. I got to be careful with my head coach. My head coach is a CEO. Like Robert Saleh is a defensive coordinator going into the Jets, and you have the Sam Darnold situation. He has to hire the right person to then find out if Sam Darnold is their quarterback as they move forward here. You know, that's where you got to be. You know, Rex Ryan was a wonderful defensive-minded coach, but you got to be a CEO that oversees everything here. But, yeah, got that information 2 weeks ago, I think, from a source. And he said, I hope you're sitting down, but you guys keep talking about Eric Bieniemy. I don't know if he's going to get a job. And I went, well, I'm sitting down, and wow, that's surprising. All right, we'll get to phone calls, best and worst of the weekend. Let me sneak in one here before we take a break. Joe in Ohio. Hey, Joe, best and worst of the weekend.
Hey, Dan. Last week I called in about my Browns win. You said to call back on a win or loss. My best of the weekend is watching a Browns game in mid-January. That was cool. Worst of the weekend is the Browns giving me hope in Browns fashion only to have a 50-year-old Michigan quarterback run for 20 yards that's not Tom Brady and is Chad Henne. And it was, you know, I like that they fought back, but the Chiefs were the better team, and it is what it is, you know.
You hung in there, though. Joe, thank you. I mean, the Browns hung in there against a great team, and they made it close. And I think, you know, you got a rookie head coach. You got a quarterback that is gaining maturity there. They started to figure out who they were, but they hung in there. And that's what I love seeing. You don't see a team that just sort of quits. You know, they hung in there and had a chance. Yeah, Paul.
The best thing that could happen to Chad Henne is he never throws another pass in the NFL. He stays on the bench maybe two or three more years behind Mahomes, takes a knee, maybe in a nice December game, but he can now put his feet up and live in Kansas City for the rest of his life.
I think we already have our T-shirt with Chad Henne. I don't know if Chad Henne thought he was going to have a T-shirt made in his honor, but how about anything is possible? Anything is possible. Like anything is possible. All right. Well, maybe we don't go with the T-shirt.
We had it in the works months ago, but we just didn't have the opening by Chad Henne. The shirt was ready, but Henne got no run.
Anything is possible. Suck on that, Todd.
I like it. I'm all in on that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, anything is fine. Well, I don't know. You gave me that look, like kind of a side eye, like, okay.
No, because when you first hear it, it sounds like someone's like slurring their word. But it's a perfect play
anything,
on
anything. Anything is possible.
And Kevin Garnett loves it.
We'll take a break here. We'll talk to Lewis Riddick from the Mothership and get his thoughts on the team that's in best shape moving forward of those who lost over the weekend. And how does he see these conference title games playing out? Did he think that was a dirty hit on Patrick Mahomes? And would he change the rule of the ball going into the end zone with the touchback? So we'll check in with Lewis Riddick coming up next here, 20 after the hour, Dan Patrick Show. Ever wondered just how far an extra mile really goes? Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out. Because there's a variety of vans that they have. The durable Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, the versatile Mercedes-Benz Metris, each tailored to match your work or play lifestyle. I had not been in one of the Sprinter vans. They brought the one in that one of you is going to win in our contest with FoxSportsRadio.com. Not you guys.
Oh.
Somebody in the audience here. And, man, was I impressed. Just the luxury of it. They had all the flat screens. They have an awning that comes out. They have a grill on the back. And they have a sound system in there. It is the ultimate tailgate rig. Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. And you can enter FoxSportsRadio.com or DanPatrick.com. a chance to win that Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van equipped with the TVs and a wood pellet grill. Get all the information, entry details at foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com. Sweepstakes end January 24th, 2021. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. More phone calls coming up. If you missed Troy Aikman, we'll bring back some of his comments earlier. You know, Troy was in, I think it was a conference title game, and he suffered a concussion. He went to the hospital. He has no memory whatsoever of that conference title game, and then he played in the Super Bowl the next week. Let's bring in Lewis Riddick, the Monday Night Football analyst, former pro scout, director of pro personnel, and, of course, a former NFL defensive back who joins us on the program. Lewis, thanks for joining us. Was that a dirty hit on Patrick Mahomes, in your opinion, by Mac Wilson?
No, it really didn't. It didn't come off that way to me watching it live. And, you know, having watched Mac Wilson play and you know, and anecdotally just kind of like seeing what other people have said about Mac Wilson and how Mac kind of expressed, you know, his feelings afterwards, it didn't seem like that. Quite honestly, Dan, when I saw the hit, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, wow, where did it come from? I mean, how did he get – how did he get concussed on this play? Because it wasn't a vicious style hit. It wasn't like the same kind of hit like Jadeveon put on Carson Wentz in the playoff game a year ago. It wasn't that same kind of, you know, hit to the back of the head. So I mean, I was kind of shocked, quite honestly, when Patrick got up to looking the way that he did. But you know, from all indications, based on what Andy said, he was doing well after the game, and hopefully he can play next week.
Well, I thought Sorensen's hit on Higgins, helmet to helmet, was far more right. egregious, and that was not called.
Absolutely. I mean, no question about that. And I think that's something that the league and the referees are going to have to be more consistent about and continue to work to try and be more consistent. Because, look, I mean, Nick clearly dropped his head, clearly hit Higgins in the side of the head. I mean, it's as plain as day, and although that's not reviewable, I mean, it's wild that's not being called with more consistency. And I understand it's a big game and it's a crucial play, and you don't have crucial plays like that in ball games decided by referee calls and flags being put on the field. But in the name of safety, which is always what this has always been about, you have to strive for more consistency than that.
What do you think of the rule where you fumble the ball out of the end zone and automatically, you know, the defense, you turn it over to the defense?
Yeah, I think I'm like everyone else. I mean, you don't. It seems very ridiculous that, you know, that you're being punished for effort, for trying to score the football, and, you know, and then you lose possession of the football totally at that point in time, and, you know, you don't have another chance to try and punch it in. I mean, with the rule being what it is, I mean, you've heard many coaches, you know, Bill Belichick in particular, and I know Kevin Stefanski was talking about it as well, coach players to not reach the ball out unless you are sure. Unless you know you're able to score, don't do it, which you're never going to know if you're able, you know, to score per se. And it sucks because it's one of those plays that really kind of took the wind out of the sails of the Browns at that point in time. But it's something I'm sure they're going to look at here in the offseason, because you don't want those kind of things again coming up in big games, Dan, deciding football games or deciding the momentum, or, you know, significantly swinging the momentum of football games.
But how would you fix the rule?
I think, you know, that's hard to say. I mean, I think there's a number of different ways that you could. I think at that point in time, you know, I don't really know. I don't really know.
Because I said, really just take it back to the 25-yard line, loss of down, and then that way I'm going to punish you, but I'm not going to punish you for that extra effort. I can't decimate you for something like that. Although I do agree with what Belichick and Mike Vrabel say to their players, just don't do it.
Right.
But I'm thinking, if we change the rule, how do we change the rule? Yeah. And maybe you just bring it back to the 25-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty standard way to try and legislate that kind of play, you know, as far as legislating some kind of action or some kind of punishment. It's hard. I haven't really thought it through about how exactly would you fix it, although it just seems way too punitive, obviously, to take the ball away from the offense again in punishing effort like that. I'd have to give more thought to exactly what, how to do that. And I think the league's going to have to, too. And I think that's why the rule hasn't been changed, because they probably haven't been able to think about, well, exactly what do you change it to then? What makes the most sense in that kind of situation?
As a former defensive back, I want you to put yourself in the defense yesterday with the Browns when you see Chad Henne and it's fourth down and you see the play clock. They're going to try to draw you off sides. You don't think that Chad Henne is going to run a play, given where the ball is and what's at stake here. What do you think as a defensive player in a situation like that and the possibility of them running a play?
Yeah, as a second-level defender in particular, Dan, and you're not on the defensive line, obviously, if you're a D lineman, I think first and foremost you're thinking, number one, I'm just not jumping off sides. I'm not moving till this ball moves, even if I'm late off the football. So I think their mindset is much different than the second- and third-level defenders. If you're a linebacker or safety, you're off the ball anyway, so you don't really care about hard count. It's not going to really affect you one way or another. What you need to be focused in on is, in the event that they do run a play, I need to know where I need to be. And I know is particularly where I need to be in regards to who their best players are. So I definitely needed to know where number 10 was. Yeah. I needed to know where Tyreek was going to be. And you can't relax in that type of situation. And then lastly, with fourth and one type situations, you're sitting there in the shotgun. I mean, that's more from a coaching standpoint. You just have to, like sprint right option is something that Andy Reid and all West Coast offenses have run over and over again. That's all that play was. That's what they were running back in the days of Bill Walsh. And I mean, it sounds easier, easier said than done at this point in time. But I think that's what it's about on the professional level. It's about preparation. It's about key moments like that. And you just have to be prepared for it. You can't get caught off guard. You just can't. And I know everyone from Romo to the people sitting at home were shocked that they actually ran the play. But again, if you're a second or third level defender, you're a linebacker, safety, corner, it's about doing your job and not worrying about whether or not they're just going to try and draw the front four or front five offside. And it's just too bad. It's too bad that if, in fact, people did relax and weren't really playing with the same kind of urgency that they normally would, that it ultimately cost them, because that was a huge freaking play. It was a huge play.
He's Lewis Riddick, the ESPN Monday Night Football analyst. Of the four losing teams over this weekend, who's in the best shape moving forward?
Wow. Really, I mean, I would say, look, the Browns are – I think the Browns are in good shape, because Kevin really does have a good idea of what he wants his football team to look like. And for the first time in a long time, he's got them pointed in the right direction. And Andrew Berry has done a fantastic job of continuing some of the work that they have done previously as far as stockpiling draft picks and drafting young players. So I think they're in good shape from an AFC standpoint. And look, I think Baltimore is too. On the NFC side, I think the Rams got to figure out exactly what it is that they really feel towards Jared Goff, and if he is going to be the guy for the future for them moving forward. And because it just sounds like Sean at this point in time is just noncommittal, and that he's really going to take a deep dive, hard look at his football team, particularly at that position. But from a young player standpoint, they have done a pretty darn good job under some difficult circumstances, given what they've given up in terms of draft capital to get some of the players that they have, of still stockpiling that roster and positioning themselves for the future here in one of the toughest divisions in football, if not the toughest division in football, ultimately out there in the NFC West. So I think those two teams in particular look real good going forward. I mean, the Saints have a lot of issues going. I mean, they are just in absolute cap hell going forward. They got to figure out what's going on at quarterback now, because you have to assume that Drew's last game was last night. Is Jameis the guy? Is Taysom the guy? What's the situation there? And how are they going to continue to build out this roster, given the fact that they're going to have such limited resources from a salary cap room perspective?
Would you rather go against Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? There's no third option there, by the way.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think that's so, man, either way, man, I'm gonna be disrespecting to the greats. But I think right now, I mean, I'd rather go against Tom because of the fact that, look, I think Tom has his own reasons for wanting to continue to be great and obviously get to the Super Bowl. And the guy has never become complacent despite the fact that he has been the most successful individual probably in team sports, maybe definitely in the history of the NFL. But Aaron's just on a different, he's on a different level and has a mindset in a cockiness in kind of a way about him right now that, having talked to them both this year on Monday night production calls, that you just knew that he was going to continue to try and just absolutely torch everyone all year long. And he was in a zone with Matt LaFleur that maybe he's never ever been in his entire career, and that's saying something given some of the spectacular seasons that he's had.
But can we simplify this, Low Lewis, and say when the Packers drafted Jordan Love, they lit a fire in Aaron Rodgers?
Well, we can try to. Although, if you ask him, and when you talk to him, he won't say it lit a fire, although you know it did to some degree. I mean, because you know him, he's just one of the – he's a type A competitor. I just think he hit a level in his second year, in the off season, in terms of his relationship with Matt, that this was inevitable, whether or not they drafted Jordan or not. I think this the evolution in terms of his comfort in that offense was going to happen, Dan, no matter what.
I would draft a quarterback in this year's draft, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, look, he's again, given all, no matter how successful he has been, and that's the cool thing about all these guys who are supreme achievers. They, I mean, just like the Jordan, like we saw with Jordan in The Last Dance, they always are looking for something. And even though they won't admit it, of course it drives them. But I think that relationship, and I'm big on that part of it, on the importance of relationships. As he developed that relationship with Matt LaFleur in the offseason, and Matt talked about that too, this thing just took off, man. I mean, it just took off. And you see it happening with Tom right now. As him and Bruce get more comfortable, as him and Byron get more comfortable in Tampa Bay, they look like they are starting to click. And they really did last night. Now, is it going to be enough against Green Bay? I mean, you know, you've been up there. You know how miserable it is up there. And Aaron has talked about it. How much are you willing to suffer when you come to Lambeau? How much can you take? How soon until you start looking at the clock going, hey, those buses right outside the stadium, heat them up, man. I'm going to get the hell out of here. That's what he says. It's how long are you willing to suffer? And we're going to find out next week as far as Tampa's concerned.
Let's see. What else did I have? Oh, how do you salvage Deshaun Watson?
You know, I was just asking this a little while ago. I don't know. I mean, you know how relationships are. Sometimes it's not salvageable. Sometimes you just breach someone's trust so much to the point where there is no turning back. There just isn't. And this sounds so systemic down there and so ingrained in the way not only he feels, but other players feel too, that I don't know if you do. I just don't know if you do. And that would be a damn shame, to be honest with you.
But you start taking offers, though, Lewis?
What's that?
You start taking offers?
I think you have to listen. Because if the guy doesn't want to play and he has a no-trade clause and you can't dictate to him where you send him to, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? And they're in a terrible situation from a team rebuild as far as not having draft capital. And they could get a boatload of it. And there's teams out there who have a boatload of it to offer them. Now, that would be a terrible way to start off your tenure down there if you're Nick Caserio. But, hey, if you're Nick, you're like, hey, look, I'm not the one who created this situation. I'm not the one who directly created this situation, but I'm going to try and make the best of it because it may be one of those games that you can't recover. And if you listen to Deshaun and you talk to people who have been down there, and it's not just Deshaun who's feeling this way. He's just the front-facing guy. He's just the one. God forbid, I'll tell you what, if J.J. Watt comes out and says something like this too, to the point where he says, look, I just want out of here. I want to end my time here. because the wheels are going to really come off.
Well, he's going to.
And that's too bad.
Yeah, he's not going to play there next year. I can't see JJ playing there. And also, I was told this 2 weeks ago by a source. Don't be surprised if Eric Bieniemy does not get a head coaching job. Now there's two openings, Lewis. What am I missing here with Eric Bieniemy? And it looks like Leslie Frazier might be the leading candidate with Houston. And then we have Philadelphia.
I think what you have is, look, human beings are making these decisions, and human beings engage in confirmation bias all the time. And right now, for some reason, and I don't really want to go down this rabbit hole to the point where, you know, we make this into a racial discussion, but for some reason, all these things, all these different excuses keep coming up about Eric, whether it be he doesn't interview well, or are there things in his past that cause you to press pause, you know, in terms of his accountability and leadership and you know, his dependability going forward, which are just BS. And Andy has talked about so many different times that it's just ridiculous to even bring up at this point. But I think that's what's happening. Then, of course, there's the whole he doesn't call plays. Well, you know what? I've talked to Andy enough times about this in Red Beach to say that, look, the amount of responsibility that they put on him is the same, if not more, than the responsibility that Andy gave to both Doug and Matt Nagy. So I would hope like hell that this is not simply about, you know, the whole, you know, being comfortable with hiring people who don't necessarily look like you, have the same experiences as you, and you still have those kind of hangups and have those kind of reservations that would keep you from hiring a young coach like him, a relatively young coach like him, who has coached one of the greatest players we've seen coming into this league ever, and who vouches for him without pause. I would hate I would hope that that is not something that is deciding this, you know, this man's future as far as being a head coach. But I'm not naive enough to think that it's not a factor, because there's no other reason. There's no other reason at this point, Dan. There's just flat out no other reason. And that's awful. That's something I know the commissioner does not want to be the case. I've talked to the commissioner. I know how important that is to him. And for this to be something that, again, we're addressing another year, another hiring cycle, is just flat out embarrassing and ridiculous that we're having to even entertain these conversations. Why isn't Eric Bieniemy at the forefront of someone's, you know, of someone's hiring wish list? Why isn't he not at the top? I'd love to know what those reasons are, those objective reasons are. I would love to have sat in on an interview with him to where people come out of an interview and go, nah, he's not quite the guy. And that's not to take anything away from some of these other guys who are getting jobs, because I tell you this, I said back in September, the very first time I talked to Brandon Staley, this kid is fantastic. He's fantastic. Was blown away by him. And Sean told me that at the Super Bowl last year. You're going to be blown away by Brandon Staley. He is that sharp. I've talked to Robert Saleh. I know how impressive he is. I know how impressive he is. Brian Daboll, I know how impressive, even though he may not get his job either in this cycle, I know how impressive these guys are. Arthur Smith, I've known for 15 years. Arthur Smith used to come and watch tape with me in Washington, sitting in the scouting room, in the scouting hallway, when he was just trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his life. And Vinny Serrato and his dad, Fred Smith, said, hey, can he just sit in here and watch film with you? He just wants to be around football. And now I knew Arthur was going to be a head coach. So these guys are fantastic. But for Eric right now to have the conversation swirling around him in the manner in which it is just criminal. It really is. It's sad, because I've talked to him as well, and probably talked to more people about him than I've talked to about any of these guys. And it's just so unfortunate, and it's so defeating, and it's so deflating. But onward we must press. And that's just the way it is.
Well said, Lewis. Thank you. We appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Dan. Thank you.
That's Lewis Riddick from the Mothership, Monday Night Football Analyst. Take a break. We'll get the phone calls coming up and our best and worst of the weekend. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Sign up for the DP Show newsletter, available daily at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. Sign up at danpatrick.com. Enter your email address in the box that slides out in the bottom right, and Mario will make sure you get the Daily Email. Love this. Wraps up the show. Best interviews, clips from what happened during the day, and you can get it at danpatrick.com. Bruce Arians had this to say to Peter King, calling Tom Brady the consummate leader he's been all year, got the air of confidence that permeates through our team every day. I allow him to be himself, like New England didn't allow him to coach. I allow him to coach. I just sit back sometimes and watch. Best and worst of the weekend, Jeff in Milwaukee.
Hey, on the poll question, I'll take the Browns in their third place schedule. Two best of the weekend from the Packers game. The offensive line's been injured all year. They've been juggling lineups. Usually that kills teams. They did awesome on Saturday. Yep. Elkton Jenkins especially, not getting roped into Donald. And then second best, just the offense in general. This thing is rolling. I think it's smoother than any other team. And that play to Devontae was awesome versus Ramsey.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. Yeah, Jalen Ramsey was not happy because I think he thought somebody was going to pick up Devontae Adams, and then nobody did, and then Devontae Adams got the one-yard touchdown reception. Yeah, Paul.
And if you watch the replay, Rodgers gets rid of the ball like it's on fire. It gets back to him, and he's already got his arm cocked back like he sees the guy wide open.
I don't think he waits for the laces. I think he just gets it and throws. Yeah, McLovin.
Side poll question. Best receiver playing next weekend, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, and Stephon Diggs. I don't really have anyone on the Bucs right now, but those guys are, all three of them are right there.
No, if Mike Evans was playing at his normal high level, then it would be a fun conversation there. I might go Stephon Diggs as a surprise there because I think he is essential to a young quarterback. Whereas Rodgers has all this experience, he can spread the wealth. He's so experienced at finding somebody, going through his progressions. For the Bills and Josh Allen to succeed, I think Stephon Diggs has to have a big game. So I would probably say him. Doug in Florida. Doug, best and worst of the weekend.
Hey, Dan, I got two. My Chargers finally getting a coach. I guess the worst is I don't know who he is. And my second best is I found The Office on Peacock. Thank you for that. And just real quick, can I run through the lineup? You're obviously the man, Michael G. Scott. I'd say Fritzy is Kevin, but you treat him like Toby. McLovin's got to be Andy Bernard because, you know, the Ivy League. Yep. And I'd say Seton would be who would Seton be? He's cool. He want to be his best friend. I'd say Jimothy. And then I can't think of Polly would be Dwight. He's loyal to you. He has no emotions. And he would die for you.
Nailed it.
All right. But I don't want to be Michael Scott. I like Michael Scott, one of the great TV characters in history. Yeah, McLovin.
You want to be John Krasinski? Is that?
I would rather be Jim. Seton got to be Jim. All right. All right, we'll give you our best and worst of the weekend coming up. Also, more phone calls. Bring back a couple of comments from Troy Aikman from the first hour. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com. Final hour in the show coming up. One more item in the second hour, it's Rock Auto. All the parts your car or truck will ever need. RockAuto.com, a family business founded by automotive engineers in 1999. They've been in the automotive industry their entire careers, so they know exactly what you're looking for. They want to help you. Two goals in mind: give you direct access to all the parts information hidden in the computers and catalogs behind the parts store counter. Second, they want to make those parts affordable. They offer reliably low prices. At RockAuto.com, choose the part brands, prices, features you want anytime. They're there for you 24/7. RockAuto.com has probably a lot of the parts you might have been told dealer only are no longer available. Parts delivered directly to your home or office. You don't waste the time phoning, driving, waiting in lines. You go to RockAuto.com. Make sure you tell them we sent you. Write Dan Patrick in there. How did you hear about us box? RockAuto.com. They have the correct parts for old and new cars. RockAuto.com. Specific oil, transmission fluid, antifreeze, and other chemicals your car must have. RockAuto.com.